Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington, where we bring you all the news from the nation's capital that the government does not want you to know. You know, when you go and you choose a candidate for political office, most of us look at a variety of positions that the candidates stand for, and we try to figure out which issues approximate our own. It's very rare and unusual to get a candidate that agrees with us on all positions, but we look at a variety. We say this candidate mostly supports what we support, and we pull the lever. There are some issues, though, that for some people make all the difference in the world. There are some issues, like gun control or gay rights or the environment or Social Security, where someone will look at a candidate's stand on that issue alone, and that will decide it. That will decide it for that voter more than any other issue. And I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that the single issue that's the greatest single issue for single-issue voters is the issue of abortion. And I'm talking about both sides, whether you are pro-life or pro-choice. There are people who have told me that, you know, Mark, I agree with the Democrats on taxes and on Social Security and in the environment, gay rights, but I'm pro-life. I cannot vote for a candidate that believes that abortion should be legal, so I'm going to hold my nose and pull the lever and vote for that conservative. And flip side, I have had people who tell me, you know, I like the Republicans' views on foreign policy, on tax policy, but I'm pro-choice, and I just can't hold my nose and vote for a candidate who believes that all abortions should be banned, so I'm gonna vote for the person who's pro-choice. And what's interesting to me, and what I'm trying to understand, and hopefully in this hour I will understand, is the incredible passions in this issue and whether there's any hope for compromise. Frankly, it doesn't seem to me like there is. If you're pro-life, if you believe that from the moment of conception, that is a life, a child, a baby, equivalent to human dignity to you and me, well, ending that life is murder. There doesn't really seem to be an exception. And if you are pro-choice and you believe that a woman's body is her own, it belongs to her, it's her body, and the government can't force her to be pregnant if she doesn't want to be, well, I guess I don't see any compromise there either. But I'm going to talk with two people who are really experts on both sides of this, people who've really thought about it, and, well, I'm going to get right to them. My first guest is going to be Randy Alcorn. He's the founder and director of Eternal Perspective Ministries. He's the author of two books. One is called Why Pro-Life, and the other is called Pro-Life Answers to Pro-Choice Arguments. And then later on, I'm going to have Ann O'Hanlon. She's the executive director of NARAL Pro-Choice Virginia. And, of course, we will take your calls. All you have to do is dial in 877-57-SCOOP. Now, I know abortion is a passionate issue on both sides, and so I've decided, in a way to get out some real discussion and not, well, a lot of talking over each other, is to divide up the show into 15-minute segments. I'm going to do my first 15 minutes with Randy Alcorn, who is definitely pro-life. Then I'm going to spend my second 15 minutes on Ann O'Hanlon, back again to Randy Alcorn, back again to Ann O'Hanlon, so they can address each other's arguments, but both have a good enough time to speak. So without further ado, let me first introduce you to Randy Alcorn, the founder and director of Eternal Perspective Ministries. Randy, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thanks, Mark. Great to be with you.
Let me ask you this. It would seem to me that to be pro-life, you believe that from the moment of conception, that is a life, a human life of equivalent human dignity to everyone else. Is that a fair statement?
Or? Yes, that is a fair statement, absolutely.
Okay, is there anything else that you would characterize as the pro-life position, just the basic pro-life position?
I think that regardless of size and age, wherever you are on the continuum between conception and death, it doesn't matter how big you are. It doesn't matter how old you are. NFL players and NBA players are not better than jockeys because they're bigger than jockeys, and a 10-year-old is not better than a 3-year-old, who is not better than a 1-year-old, who is not better than a preborn child, and a teenager is not better than any of those. It's just simply to be on the continuum of human life, not where you're on it and what condition you are on it.
So that would mean, obviously, that you reject the characterization in the 1973 case of Roe v. Wade, which said that basically just before birth, when a fetus is strong enough to live outside the mother, that's a life of equivalent human value, I guess, to you and me. But when it's a zygote, when it's smaller than a period and can't live outside the mother, that is something that can be aborted. I assume you completely reject that.
That's right. I do reject that, and I think it should remind us of the fact that it's not how dependent you are. For instance, a born child, you leave a one-year-old alone and neglect that one-year-old, and that one-year-old will die. That one-year-old is as dependent upon adults as a preborn child is. And so we would never use that logic to say, well, then the one-year-old really isn't a human being. We recognize it is a human being, even though it's dependent upon adults.
Of course, there is one distinction, and I pardon me if I ask you some tough questions. I plan to ask Ann O'Hanlon tough questions,
sure,
too, I promise you. But obviously, a one-year-old that you leave alone can be taken care of by any adult, whereas a one-month-old embryo can only be taken care of by his or her mother.
That's right. That's absolutely true. And then the question we have to ask ourselves is, is that divided fairly among all human beings? In other words, the woman who is carrying this child, was she carried by a woman who those same things were also true of? And did that woman have a responsibility, and did the man who fathered that child have a responsibility to care for this helpless preborn person? So I think it distributes responsibility equally. It's not asking of any woman something that would not have been expected of her own mother, and most people would say, hey, you know, of any woman something that would not have been expected of her own mother, and most people would say, hey, you know, I'm glad my mom didn't take my life, and I'm glad that she cared for me and loved me and took me through the full term of pregnancy, and she had a responsibility to do that, and I do too.
But of course, sometimes a child is wanted. Sometimes a baby is wanted. In that case, if a woman chooses to be pregnant, then obviously it's hard for her to complain later that she's pregnant. But if a woman doesn't make that choice, if birth control fails, or in extreme circumstances, in cases of risk changes, a baby that she never asked for.
Well, I think the question is whether the nature of the unborn child changes depending upon whether an adult or several adults want the child or not. Child's value is determined by whether or not any adult wants them.
But, of course, most of us come into existence because our parents choose to have us. I mean, after all, there are lots of sperm and egg that never meet, and there are plenty of possible lives out there that never come to pass. How is it different when, I mean, I guess preconception. I mean, if my mother and my father had decided not to have me, I wouldn't exist, and, you know, I could complain about that, but obviously I wouldn't be around to complain. How does the moment of conception differ from, say, a few moments before conception?
Well, I think the moment of conception is where the new DNA is established. You know, you've got the chromosomes from mother and father. This is the first time this individual has ever existed. This person is clearly scientifically not a part of his mother's body. He is located within his mother's body, but he has completely different DNA. He has an independence. All of his character traits, including his height and his eye color and all is determined at that moment. So you have all of the equivalent of hundreds of volumes of encyclopedia information that's built in to this person. And if allowed to progress, this person has one choice I am against, along with things like kidnapping and rape and other things like that, is the choice to take the life of a child, because that child will then be robbed of a life and of a lifetime of choices. The tens and thousands or hundreds of thousands of choices that he or she would have made in their lifetime are all taken away by one single choice of another person.
Randy, I have a lot more questions for you, but I want to go to the phones, which have lit up. If you want to call in, actually, all the lines are busy now, but I hope you will try in just a few minutes at 877-57-SCOOP. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Randy Alcorn.
This is Bill from Falls Church, and I just want to ask Randy one thing. If a human life is so precious, why won't he let stem cells be used to keep people alive?
I am all for stem cell research, and I'm all for using stem cells. I am not in favor of embryonic stem cells, and this is one of the things that is interesting in this debate. There are adult stem cells. There are stem cells from umbilical cord, from placentas. There's even stem cells taken from one's own person that recent research has shown can be very, very effective. I'm all for stem cell research, but I'm not in favor of killing unborn children to use their stem cells, because they're not just stem cells, they're people.
Go ahead, Bill.
Can I respond?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. If the embryonic stem cells are not wanted by the parties involved, and both the mother and the father, why shouldn't those stem cells be used maybe to help another child of the mother or the father
who has
a serious debilitating illness?
Right. I think it's a similar question for those of us that believe that human life begins at conception. It would be similar to asking, why didn't the American Medical Association and other medical associations in the world feel to use the research experiment on to use supposedly for the benefit of other people? And after the war, there was a big debate about that. Why shouldn't we use this? After all, it was done. We're not even saying it was right that it was done. But there was a sense we used this material or this research even, and what we will do is we will justify the taking of innocent human life, and we don't want to do that.
Aren't you making a judgment for people that you have no right to make a judgment about when you suggest that a zygote is a human life, when both the male and the female that produce the zygote feel like that the zygote, which contains embryonic stem cells which might be able to help another child of theirs, is needed more in that place? Right have you got to interfere with somebody else's life?
There are a matter of feelings, and then there are a matter of facts and scientific facts and when human life begins. And even most pro-abortion people are now beginning to acknowledge that what they said all along about product of conception and blob of tissue and all of that is really not true, that this is a distinct human life, even though that they don't recognize that it has, you know, the same rights. But I think it comes down to, do you believe that kidnapping is wrong? Let me just ask you, do you believe it?
I believe that kidnapping is wrong, but I also believe that I have no right to
interfere
tell
with
you
someone
whether you whether let me please let me finish.
Well,
I
no,
have no
actually,
right.
I was talking, and I'm just asking you to let me finish. I only ask you that question about the kidnapping because the point is, what right do you have to impose your anti-kidnapping morality on people who believe it's right to kidnap? In other words, it's either right or it's wrong. Let's keep our focus on the discussion of, are these adults who would like to use an aborted baby for stem cell research, are they correct in their judgment or are they not? To say that everybody can make up their own mind is like saying the man next door can beat his child to death if that's what he wants to do, and the rest of us have no right or responsibility to interfere. And I think
what you're suggesting is that all of our laws are immoral and indecent. I suggest that a society as a whole must go ahead and make laws for the benefit of society, and that includes people who are alive and living, not little zygotes.
Bill, thank you very much for your is the point. I mean, the question is whether or not it's a full life. Let me ask you this. If the decision comes, you have a pregnant woman, and this, you know, this very well could happen. It has happened throughout human history. There was a time 100 years ago when maybe one in five women died in childbirth. If it your view that they're equally valuable, and if
yes,
the woman has to die so the fetus can live, the woman should die so the fetus can live.
No, I believe that they're equally valuable, and I would trust and respect the decision of the people who are involved in that circumstance. It is an extremely rare situation where a choice has to be made between the two. But when that choice has to be made, more often than not, the choice, for instance, a fast-growing uterine cancer, the choice has to be made to perform a surgery which has as a side effect the death of that preborn child in order to save the life of the mother. More often than not, the mother's life is the life that can be saved. You certainly should not say, okay, well, because we can't save one life without taking the other life, therefore we will not.
I mean, the doctor could save the woman at the expense of the fetus, or could save the fetus at the expense of the woman. Should you flip a coin? Are these lives truly equally valuable?
I think that equally valuable on the subjective level, of course, because people have bonded with that woman.
Sure.
And this woman has maybe other children and has a husband and has value her. Understandably, more people will value her. And as I said, I think I made clear, didn't I, that I'm not saying that the woman's life should be taken in order for the child to be lived.
Well, I guess I take that same analogy then to the question of frozen embryos used for stem cell research. If you have to destroy an embryo that no one knows, no one loves, as you point out, hasn't bonded with anyone, has never existed in any real sense that we know human existence, in order to save a 14-year-old child with Parkinson's disease who people have bonded with, have loved, does think and feel and has brain waves, shouldn't that sacrifice be made for the same reason you might sacrifice a fetus to save a mother's life?
Well, I think what we have to ask ourselves is, does the fact that bonding has taken place with a person give more value to that person? For instance, you know, there's an earthquake in India, and most Americans maybe hear about it. They feel bad about it, and maybe they send some financial help or whatever, but their life moves on. Whereas if their father or mother or brother or sister or child dies, then, of course, because they have bonded with that person, their life is affected in much more dramatic ways. But would we then conclude that the value of the life of the person in India is less than the value of this person that we know just because we have bonded with them? So my point is there's a slippery slope here, and once we start defining human value on the basis of whether or not somebody loves or has bonded with or wants this person, then it carries over to all the rest of life, too. What about when we're not wanted? What about when we're not valued?
Let me ask you one more question, then I've got to go to commercial and get to Anne O'Hanlon. I know she wants to respond to some of this. Frozen embryo has never had a thought. It's never had brain waves. You can argue that there's a heartbeat or brain waves at 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, four months. But clearly a frozen embryo has never had a conscious thought, and a 14-year-old with Parkinson's disease obviously is thinking and feeling. And I know scientists often declare brain dead is a time when we declare someone is dead, Terry Schiavo case notwithstanding, as a tough case. Shouldn't we save the person who has a functioning brain over the person that has no brain waves?
Well, I think the 14-year-old with Parkinson's can be treated in numbers of other ways. I'm an insulin-dependent diabetic, and, you know, I've had people say to me, well, don't you realize that all the embryonic stuff, you know, I mean, that could be ultimately what takes away your diabetes, you know? And I say, well, you know what? I don't like to live with my diabetes, but I'm not going to sacrifice another human being. Even another human being that isn't very old, isn't very advanced. The question that we have to ask, Mark, I think related to your question, is it a person's functionality or is it a person's nature that is what their value is about? I think it's a person's nature. And once we start going on the basis of how well can this individual contribute to the needs of other individuals, and how much can they consciously verbalize, participate in society? All of us were once young and weak. The strong should not take advantage of the weak and use them.
She's the executive director of NARAL Pro-Choice Virginia. If you want to call in and ask tough questions, you're always welcome to do so. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop.
Now 94 years young, the ethical treatment of animals has been her life's work. Center in Charlestown, West Virginia, from scruffy mutt to sleek purebred, deserves a loving home. All have been spayed or neutered and current with their shots and vaccinations. Plus, the majority of dogs have completed basic obedience training. You can find photos and bios of the dogs.org. That's BAACS.org. You'll be doing something very nice for the pet you adopt, and it doesn't take long for you to discover how much these pets will help you and add to your quality of life. The Briggs Animal Adoption Center is an affiliate of the National Humane Education Society. For more information, call 304-724-6558 or visit their website, www.baacs.org.
Magellan? No. But who knows what Magellan did?
Sail around the world.
Right. Now.
Sometimes, a child who doesn't seem interested is really a child with a speech or hearing problem.
Blackbeard? Who said Blackbeard? And what did Blackbeard do?
He was a pirate.
Time and again, it's his skills.
Jamie, are you with us? Who can tell us?
He wanted to go to India.
Many communication disorders can be detected early and corrected, so learning and literacy skills can develop normally. Make sure your child has the speech, language, and hearing abilities to keep up in class. For more information, visit ASHA.org, a public service message from the American Speech, Language, Hearing Association and this station.
New route to
Asia!
Good.
If you've been thinking about consolidating your consultant, who will explain the benefits of the consolidation program, including locking in the lowest rate in history, reducing your current monthly payment by up to 58%, and cutting down multiple payments into one...
Rates took a slight dip this week.
Sorry to interrupt, but LendingTree.com is the only place where banks compete over your mortgage. Then you get up to four real offers that you win.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're talking about one of the most contentious issues in American politics. It's the question of abortion, and it's the question of whether you are pro-life or pro-choice. I was talking with Randy Alcorn, who was pro-life. I'm now moving on to Ann O'Hanlon, the executive director of NARAL Pro-Choice Virginia. I will get back to Randy Alcorn later on. The lines are full, but when they are not full, you're welcome to call in at 877-57-SCOOP. Ann O'Hanlon, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you.
Well, you heard what Randy had to say. Let me just start you off there and see if you have a response to him, and then I've got some tough questions for you.
Well, you guys went over an awful lot of material, obviously. I mean, I guess, you know, I think we all know at this point in this debate that I don't think Randy's going to change the minds of very many people. I don't think I'm going to change the minds of very many people, at least in the course of this hour. People pretty much know where they stand on whether or not they believe abortion should remain legal. Leaders in Congress are trying to work on prevention first, on birth control efforts, so that there are fewer abortions in the country. We reduce the number of unintended pregnancies. And what's distressing to a lot of us in the pro-choice movement is that with the abortion opponents toward working to make abortions less common and less necessary, they're not working together with us on birth control measures, and that is what's really distressing to us.
One of the listeners points out on the blog, and this is definitely a pro-life listener, points out that there's a statistic by the Alan Guttmacher Gernot, but it does sound awfully high.
I think they're making that up. I've looked at the Alan Guttmacher website quite a bit, and 46% of women do not use abortion as birth control. I think there are a lot of distortions you hear from, you know, Randy's side of the movement for the end of her childbearing years. Using it as birth control is not something women do. It's expensive. It's emotionally and physically difficult to go through. You know, they're simply sort of fictionalizing things to make those of us who believe abortion should be legal sound like unreasonable people.
Well, let me ask you this. With Randy, I focused on the very early parts, the embryo, the zygote, because for me, that is where abortion to me is the least troubling. With you, I'm going to focus on late-term abortions, on what they call partial birth abortions, where many of us have seen this very gruesome technique where they take a fetus that's could be 7-8 months old and you know, grab it by the feet and use the scissors to stab it in the skull. It's an awful procedure, and yet people on your side want to defend it. Am I wrong there?
Yeah, you are wrong on a couple points.
Okay.
Of it, Mark. One is the timing, and again, people like to refer inaccurately to late-term abortions. The law of the land, Roe v. Wade, which the pro-choice side does not take issue with at all, we're completely in agreement, is that once there is viability, once that baby can live outside of his mother's body, the state, the government, has a right to have an interest. We don't argue with that. We don't take issue with it. We never have. That is about 24. People refer to our second trimester. They're rare. 91% of abortions take place in the first trimester, and they are often because of some kind of extraordinary circumstance. The parents receive word after amniocentesis happens in the second trimester that this is a profoundly they go in for a procedure that is not what, again, that side likes to refer to as partial birth, which is a term they made up. Intact dilation and extraction is the medical terminology. Those procedures are used very rarely and used only in extreme situations. So I think, you know, certainly later term second trimester abortions can be upsetting to a lot of people, but the motto that many of us live by is we trust women. We trust women to know what the reality is of the health of that fetus based on the medical information given to her, what the reality is in her family, and then to trust her doctor to use the medical technique necessary in the circumstance that is safest for her. And what they refer to as partial birth abortion is used very rarely and only in circumstances when the physician believes it's the procedure that needs to be used.
Okay.
I was just going to say, Mark, this is the first time we have seen the banning of a medical procedure in the history of the United States. Never before has the government felt that it was their duty to step in between a woman and her doctor. And suddenly, they do think that that's where the government belongs.
Well, let me go to the phones if I can. They are full, and that way it'll open up some lines for some other people to call in. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Ann O'Hanlon. Caller, are you there?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the line.
This is John Morrell from Oregon.
Hi, John. How are you?
Fine. I had a couple things to say about abortion.
Go ahead.
I think in the main, abortion should be left to women. That as you have this Randy and as you have Sean Hannity and Dr. Dobson spouting off about it, and I don't know whether I'm the only one that doesn't like to hear these men giving advice to women. It should be women that makes these decisions. And I think abortion should be very rare, and but I believe that a woman will know when they have to do that. I think we should have confidence that women will make a good decision.
Okay, thank you for your comment.
I have had a personal experience with abortion. My wife had an abortion some 40 years ago when it was difficult to get in. There were no abortion clinics, and we had just had a month or two later she became pregnant and said, I just can't do it. I cannot go through this.
Now, this was before abortions were legal, so what did you do?
That's right.
I would suspect the procedures in Mexico...
It was a very unpleasant experience.
I was going to say procedures in Mexico were not quite as safe in the United States.
No, she just said she couldn't do it. And emotionally, she just absolutely could not go through that again. And she's just been through a pregnancy.
Well, John, let me ask you this. Has she suffered any kind of emotional reaction to her abortion?
I was about to say that, because upshot of that is that in succeeding years she has regretted that tremendously. It's been emotionally very hard on her. She regretted that, and I have myself.
Interesting.
Abortions of Medicare or Medicaid, because wealthy people can always do that, you know, but it's the poor people that have a problem, and I think it should be left to a woman.
Thank you, John, for your call. I appreciate it. And let me ask you about John's second point, because one of the controversies in abortion is precisely that. It's paying for poor women to have abortions. A number of people have written on my blog that the thing that really rankles them, and they are pro-life supporters, is when their taxpayer money is used to go to places like Planned Parenthood to provide abortions. How do you respond to those people?
Taxpayer money to Planned Parenthood, to my understanding, goes overwhelmingly to contraception, which makes abortion less common, less necessary.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, Mark, a lot of this is the same kind of arguments over and over again, but, you know, we all have, it's part of living in a democracy, we all have things that our taxpayer dollars are used for that we don't agree with. Again, what people usually throw out most commonly is defense. A lot of people don't agree with the way some defense dollars are spent, or maybe they don't agree with the way some foreign policy dollars are spent. You know, you can be part of the government then if you want to try to change that, but what you can't do is stipulate, and if you could stipulate what your tax dollars go to, the democracy would break down. We, you know, have laws that are in place stipulating what things go to, and, you know, we just can't pick and choose
points. I'm going to take the whipsaw back to Randy Alcorn after this commercial break. The lines are now open if you want to call in. Oh, look, they closed again. There are lots of calls, and that's fine. That's a good thing. We'll be right back with your calls now to Randy Alcorn. Thank you, and we'll be back with you in just a minute. But first, we have a commercial break, and we'll be back after this.
But did you know that it's the number one killer of women nationwide? Some of these women may have it and not even know it. Heart disease claims more lives each year than breast cancer, lung cancer, or strokes combined. But there are steps you can take to protect yourself against it. While not smoking, daily exercise, and a nutritious diet are good for your health, they're critical in the fight against heart disease. Most important, get regular checkups and ask your doctor about risk factors, especially if you're over 40, when the risk of heart disease increases dramatically. For more information on how you can prevent heart disease, contact your local American Heart Association or visit their website at www.americanheart.org. It's never too late to protect your heart health. Start now.
If you're looking for a great deal, or bright ink for water, smudge, and fade-resistant photos, and built-in card slots to print directly from memory cards, you can also restore your old photos to their original beauty, all for around $99 after a $30 mail-in rebate. Buy now and also get a 20...
If you give me a fish...
If you give someone a fish...
You feed them for a day.
And you'll feed me for a day. Teach me to fish, and you'll feed me for a lifetime.
Through Volunteers of America, you can help change lives in your community.
As time flows on, there are places we return to again and again. Precious places. Places that, with your help, can endure forever. I'm Paul Newman. Help the Nature Conservancy save the last great places around the world.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're discussing the very passionate discussion of abortion, and my two guests really know it inside and out on both sides of the issue. I'm now back to Randy Alcorn. He's the author of two books, Why Pro-Life and Pro-Life Answers to Pro-Choice Arguments. Randy, what Ms. O'Hanlon had to say.
Well, I appreciate Anne. She sounds like an intelligent person and a nice person. I have to say, I do think some things on the pro-life side of things, and just some basic issues. For instance, in her response to the partial birth abortion question, it sounded like she was starting to say that she really agreed that, no, this was not appropriate, and then she ended up by saying how dare between a doctor and a woman. And I would have to say that I don't think historically you can put on the shoulder of doctors. I mean, you look at World War II and look at the Nazi doctors, and I mean, doctors are perfectly capable of making very immoral decisions. So I think it is appropriate for a society to look out for the lives of all of its members. And I think in a lot of ways a society is defined by how it cares for its weakest members. The other comment I would make is that with the caller who said men should have nothing to say about this, it's always interesting to me when I hear someone say men should have nothing to say about this, because one, it's a child has a mother, every child has a father. And if we expect men, and we should expect men and call upon them to fulfill their responsibilities as fathers, one way to do that is not to tell them that they really have no connection whatsoever to this preborn child. It's also interesting that the man who said that men should have nothing to say about this was a man saying quite a bit about it. It's just that he was saying it on the other side of the issue. And the final question I would say is why, on the question of his wife and the regret she experienced and the regret that he experienced, and then Anne asked the question, don't regret it. I would ask what I think is a more basic question is, And that is, why are they regretting it in the first place? We took into our home years ago a pregnant girl when she was 17. I'd never been involved in any pro-life things, never even thought about the abortion issue, but she had two abortions. We saw the devastation in her life, and that's what encouraged us to get involved as pro-life advocates, was originally not concerned for the unborn babies, but concerned for the damage that we saw.
Dean and Randy Alcorn.
Well, it's your California fan club here, Mark. And Randy, two quick questions, I guess. I think this has too often been used as a political football, and I'd appreciate your thoughts on that, because most of the Democrats are very reluctant to get involved in abortion. Most of the Democrats feel it should be legal and safe, but rarely used. And the red states, it's quite prevalent. But yet it's been put out there as some sort of a really human, as opposed to protoplasm forming and things like that. Because I think most doctors, their policy is if you go in the early, they have no problem with it. If you come in 6 months later, they say, why do you come to me now? And so,
Dave, those are two good questions. I'm going to hang up on you just because our lines are full to leave it open, but I will definitely address both of them to Randy. Randy, first the question of politics. Do you think abortion is too often used as a political football between the parties?
Well, yes, I think it is, and to say that everybody in a certain party thinks a certain way or believes a certain way. My recent book, Why Pro-Life, is endorsed by the head of Democrats Pro-Life. I mean, there are Democrats who are pro-life. There's no question about it. There are many Democrats who are pro-life. There are Republicans who are pro-abortion, or as they would prefer to be called, pro-choice. And so, you know, it's just a matter of statistical majorities. Yes, more pro-life in the Republican Party. But there are many things where I vote Republican, and there are many times where I don't vote Republican. And it's just a matter of looking at the individual issues. But I do think that this issue of the value of human life extends throughout the life of human beings, and I think for that very reason, it's not just the preborn child, but it's the handicapped, the disabled, the elderly, the sick, who ultimately are going to be disregarded as a result of that slippery slope that started with abortion.
Well, Randy, let me ask you about the second question Dave raised, because I actually had a listener who posted on this site on the blog before you came on a very interesting study. And again, I don't know if these things are accurate. I'm not a doctor. But the study said that 50% of the time after conception, the fertilized embryo does not implant in the woman's uterus and is actually excreted, and that even when it does implant, some 15% of the time there's a miscarriage. And I guess my question to you is, if a fertilized embryo is a life of equivalent human dignity to you or me or anyone listening to this program, as you put it, it doesn't matter whether it's a jockey or a basketball player, it's all the same life. Shouldn't we be taking extraordinary actions to prevent a fertilized embryo from just being excreted? I mean, shouldn't women wear some kind of protection so that, I mean, if this really were a life, if I really felt that this was a life equivalent to a member of my family, you know, I would think that half the time when it's naturally gone would be seen as criminal.
Well, I don't know that it's criminal. It's a fact of nature and biology, you know, but something is not being done to make that happen. There's a difference when a choice is made. You know, many people die of certain illnesses. We would see a difference between people dying of an illness and our injecting somebody with someone that brought on that illness.
True, but we work to stop the illness. I mean, yes, should be more be done to prevent.
You're right, and I think certainly education and care. And many physicians do this. You know, there are all of these pregnancy care classes. Our daughters just gave birth, both of them, in the last 7 months. You know, there are classes that are available. People go through them, how to, even before your child is born, here's what you're supposed to drink and not drink. In the state of Oregon, every restaurant you go into that serves alcohol has this thing up there that says, you know, drinking alcohol and pregnancy don't mix. And what's interesting is they show a pregnant woman, and inside they show a clearly visible little child with the features of a child. And I'm thinking, you know, it's interesting. In the state of Oregon, you're being advised not to do anything that harms your preborn child, but it's considered perfectly acceptable to kill that preborn child right up until when they're born.
Let me go back to the phones. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Randy Alcorn. Caller, you there? Last chance, caller. Caller, you there? All right, we're moving on to the next caller. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Randy Alcorn.
Yeah, this is Bert from Kansas.
Hi, Bert.
I'd like to ask a question to your pro-life guest. Let me basically say that it seems to me like pro-life people, anti-choice people, aren't giving God credit. Like the example of the miscarriage where the baby will never live to see the light of day, God's not going to put a spirit in that. He knows what's going to happen. He's omniscient. There's other cases of, like, identical twins. Does the spirit come in at conception? Does it split into two spirits? I mean, how many angels dance on the head of a pin anyway? We believe in a God that's smart enough to not put a spirit in something that's going to get miscarried. Why is it that we can't believe in a God that's not going to put a spirit in something that's just going to get used in lab tests or get aborted?
Randy, does God put a spirit into a fertilized embryo that is miscarried?
Yes, I believe so, and I think if you took that same logic, you see how faulty it is if you apply it to a three-year-old who dies. Well, that three-year-old died, and there's a sovereign God of providence. He knew the three-year-old wasn't going to die. I mean, was going to die, and so he didn't put a spirit in them. I mean, you can't say that just because a life is taken, somebody is killed. We wouldn't say that everyone who's been murdered, since God knew they were going to be murdered, he didn't put a spirit in them, and I don't think you can apply that logic either. But one comment I'd like to make is on the anti-choice characterization, which I think is always an interesting one. To call the pro-life position anti-choice is I think very unfair, because we are pro-choice about 99.99% of the choices that a woman makes, and this is one of the very few we would be, quote, anti-choice about. But we are also pro-choice about all of the decisions that this child is going to make. And no one ever seems to talk about the fact that a lifetime of choices is being taken away from this child, as well as their own life, through abortion.
Randy, let me ask you this, and I sometimes do this occasionally. If the show were to go over on the Internet, the radio show were to end but were to go over on the Internet, would you be able to stay on a little bit longer?
You bet.
Okay, all right. Bert, go ahead and see if there's a response that you have to what Randy said.
Well, I mean, it's his argument. He's given God the benefit of the doubt in the case of identical twins, because does the spirit come in at conception or does it split into two? He never answered that question.
All right, let me ask
him
that.
But he's not giving the benefit of the doubt in the case of things that go on to get aborted or used in laboratory experiments.
Well, let me ask him that, Randy. I mean, you've got one fertilized egg and then it divides into two. Is that one soul, two souls?
Well, I think at the point of the split where you have the distinction made, then that's two individuals with spirits. But until that point, it's not two, and so there would presumably be one, or however God orchestrates that. I mean, I certainly don't know.
You're giving him the benefit of the doubt.
I certainly don't know, and the Bible doesn't spell out exactly how it happens with twins. But as far as the whole benefit of the doubt thing goes, if you're talking about benefit of the doubt of the sovereignty and providence of God, again, I just don't see how you can apply that with any consistency to say that, well, because somebody's going to be used for a medical experiment, therefore, God doesn't give them a spirit. I mean, many Jews were used in medical experiments. Many children were used medical experiments in Nazi Germany. Does that mean that God didn't put a spirit in those people?
Yeah, Randy, I have to say, and then I guess I find it a little offensive that you're taking healthy people who are walking the planet and doing medical experiments on people who think, who have brainwaves, who live, who love, who have family members, and you're comparing it to an embryo that could just as well be miscarried and no one would notice. You're making them equivalent, and I must say I'm troubled by that.
Well, I can understand that you're troubled, and a lot of people are, Mark, but it comes back to, why are we troubled? We're troubled because I'm believing that human value comes in the nature of it, what a human being, who a human being is. And you're believing, apparently, and certainly many people do, that it's based upon function and capacity and ability, maturity, these things that are add-ons that don't relate to the essence of nature. I mean, surely we would all agree that all of us were this non-conscious, call it non-sentient, non-thinking, non-speaking human being early in the point of pregnancy at one time.
Sure, but all of us were egg and sperm as well.
Vein with the DNA, the chromosomes, all of that.
Okay,
human
we were half egg and half sperm, if you will.
We were people who were the product of the merging of egg and sperm, but we were not egg or sperm.
Okay, I want you to hang on for me, Randy. We're going to go right back to Ann O'Hanlon after a very, very brief commercial break. Scoop right after these messages.
Game, Mike.
Thanks. Hey, by the way, how was the doctor the other day?
Good, but my cholesterol's 200. It's a little high.
Yeah, I'm around 760.
760? You're kidding me.
Pretty impressive, huh?
No, not impressive. Not impressive at all. What are you, on some sort of butter diet?
Yeah, you know, you're Bob, man. You're not going to live long enough to pay back a loan.
There's physical health, and then there's financial health. With Score Power from Equifax, you'll get your credit report, credit score, and you'll learn how your credit decisions can affect your score, all for just $14.95. It's the first step toward healthy credit, and a score of 760 is pretty healthy. So check out Score Power at Equifax.com or call 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Yeah, I figure I can get up to around 790 by the end of the year, you know, if I'm lucky.
Look, a little advice.
Yeah?
Eat a vegetable, a smoothie, something, man.
Get the power. Score Power at Equifax.com.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're discussing the old Ann O'Hanlon. She's executive director of NARAL Pro-Choice Virginia. And I know the lines have been full most of the program. If you choose to call in, we can continue the program on, at least on the Internet, after the radio has ended. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Ann O'Hanlon, first of all, what are your comments on what Randy Alcorn and I were discussing?
I had a few reactions this time to some of the things Randy said. One thing I wanted to comment on, he was objecting to the characterization of his side of this as anti-choice. But he has routinely been using the term pro-abortion to refer to our side. And, you know, nobody's pro-abortion. We understand that it can be an agonizing, emotional thing. What we are is pro keeping the government out of people's private lives. It's a decision that women and their doctors and their families need to make, and we don't need the government sitting at the kitchen table with us while we're having these deeply personal conversations. So that is what we are, not pro-abortion. The other thing that troubled me that he seems to really like to bring up is an analogy between us and Nazi Germany, which I find inappropriate and extraordinarily offensive. That's just propaganda language. You know, we can keep this conversation civilized and discuss things. We don't have to use that kind of smear tactic. We are loving, caring people who understand that there are difficult decisions in life to be made, and we all wrestle with how they should be made and whether or not the government should be part of them. And so I just would ask him to keep the Nazi references out, because I just think that is unfair and also makes him sound ridiculous. What I would love it, Mark, if you can get to, and you haven't yet, is this sort of the current state of this debate really is beyond what a lot of this discussion has been about this hour so far, and really is to the level of birth control, that Randy's side is not joining with us to promote birth control education to our young people, to promote birth control access to folks. In fact, there have been pharmacies refusing to fill birth control prescriptions, sort of right-wing pharmacists who say they're offended by the morality of birth control. This has happened in Wisconsin, Illinois, Massachusetts, Texas, increasingly happening all over the country, and we're seeing state legislatures take up the issue with the right, saying that they find birth control to be immoral. I mean, if these are folks who really want abortion to be on the wane, they need to work together with us, step across the aisle, and work to make birth control more effective and more accessible to everyone.
And let me ask you about the question of adoption. A lot of people that are pro-life point out that, well, we have some 1.3 million abortions. I don't know if that statistic is correct. Let me just throw that out. Is that statistic correct? A year in the United States? Is that about right?
I am not totally sure, but I think it's around a million.
Okay, so we have a million abortions, and we have some 50,000 families or so. This is what a person on my blog said. Again, I'm not confirming this is true. I'm just passing on what someone wrote, and that people can't get enough babies for adoption. And how do you address that argument?
I'm not up to speed on abortion, on adoption numbers, rather. I do know there certainly are kids out there who still need foster homes, need loving homes to go to. I doubt there are enough newborn healthy babies to meet adoption needs or wants. But the Randy side on this thing is that they like to talk about little healthy babies, but people don't talk about, well, what about that this is a child who would live but would not live with complete mental capacity or with, you know, profound physical deformity. They don't like to talk about those scenarios, and that yet those are the scenarios that a lot of people face. And I think also if you talk about adoption, you've got to still come back and can't force all these women to carry their pregnancies to term to fill somebody else's, you know, desire to have a baby.
Okay, but Anne, explain to me this, and I promised I would ask you tough questions as well as Randy. If it's wrong to end fetus, fetus that will live as a child but will grow up severely mentally retarded or brain damaged or otherwise, you know, lacking and handicapped in some way, but it's not okay, I think we'd all agree it's not okay to take a living human being who's 2, 3, 5, 10 years old.
And what the law of the land has been since 1973 is that the government has the right to have a hand in this question once that fetus reaches the age of viability. Roe v. Wade allows states to ban abortion after viability. And we don't quarrel with that. In fact, 41 states do just that with our support. So abortion is illegal in most places in the country once that fetus can live outside of his mother's body. And so that's what the difference has always been in this debate has a role.
The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. There are lines open now if you want to call in. We will be going over on the Internet. I do want to hide the use of abortion as birth control. They're very upset that there are people who are terminating unwanted pregnancy, something extreme like rape or a deformed baby, but simply because they just decide the child isn't wanted. I think many of us who are pro-choice understand when there's a 16-year-old girl or understand when someone's been raped or there's a deformed baby, but sympathy for a 30-year-old married woman who is upper middle class, who can afford a child and just doesn't want one. How do you address that situation?
Well, I think there are some abortions that people find easier to understand, if you will. And as somebody who takes the position I take, maybe I know more people in these situations. I hear more stories than others. And they run, you know, across a full spectrum. And I think just because some people are troubled by one scenario over another, again, the question comes back to, is it then the government's role? And again, it always feels to me like Big Brother is watching you. If we're going to say, well, the government can say that a middle upper class woman, okay, once she's earning a certain number of dollars a year, must carry her pregnancy to term. But if a poor woman who already has three kids, then we're not how people to grapple with them individually and personally. And the right likes to paint us as people who do this as birth control, and it's simply a fiction that they find convenient and easy for their argument, and it's not the case. Frankly, the expense and, again, the emotional and physical experience you go through when you have an abortion is not something small. Some women have more than one, but people don't use it as birth control. And so they like to sort of throw that out there instead of talking about the reality of it. And, you know, again, I would take you back to the question of, if people are this upset about abortion, why aren't they working with us to to make women understand better what birth control options there are and how they can get them.
It's a good question, and I'd like, Anne O'Hanlon, if you have time to stay just a little bit over.
No, I don't,
you
Mark.
Don't.
I'm
I apologize.
Sorry. The hour was all I could give today.
Fair enough. Thank you very much for coming here on The Inside Scoop.
Thank
I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having this conversation.
I thank you very much. That ends the radio portion of The Inside Scoop. Tune in tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, for more of The Inside Scoop. I will go on just a little bit over on the internet broadcast. Hang on for that. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop, or at least those of you listening on the internet, Inside Scoop. I wanted to run just a little bit over because there were a few points that went on back and forth that didn't get quite finished. So if you are listening on the internet, you're welcome to call in 877-57-SCOOP. I do have Randy Alcorn on for just a little bit longer. Randy, welcome back to the Inside Scoop.
Thanks, Mark.
Let me ask, because I think Anne O'Hanlon raises a very strong point about birth control. What is your view on birth control? Should it be readily available to people, or should government restrict it?
Well, I have no problems with the availability of birth control. My wife and I used the birth control, conception control, is the term I prefer, but, contraceptives, many, many people do. I would say most pro-life people do. There are forms of birth control that if it's determined that they actually prevent implantation or they cause an early abortion, then understandably people, including myself, will have moral problems with them. But the general idea of contraception, no problem. Another thing that we advocate, though, that those on the other side, and I wish Ann could respond to this, is the idea of abstinence. You know, to some people, abstinence is this dinosauric type of thing. How can we even talk to our young people about that? And so we get opposed on this. Those of us who advocate the option of abstinence, even being taught as a way of thinking and a way of living in public schools, and they say, oh, you're going to impose religion, you know, on us and all that. And
but Randy, just to be clear on your position, you advocate teaching both abstinence and birth control in schools, or am I wrong there?
Well, I would advocate abstinence even more. With birth control, I have no problem with saying here are these different aspects of birth control. One thing that I don't like is when they pass out birth control to a classroom, which has happened sometimes in our area, and they say, look at this, here's where you can get it, touch it, handle it, hand it to the person behind you, the guy hands it to the girl, and everybody's giggling and all this kind of stuff, where you end up trivializing something that I think is sacred. So, yeah, because I do believe that premarital sex is a bad idea. I don't just believe that it's wrong. I believe that it's stupid in the sense that it brings destructive consequences to kids. And so, therefore, I don't think birth control should be handled in any flippant sort of way. So we'd probably have some disagreement on that.
Okay, but you...